Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Couple of stops ago, I was working at the Fresno Bee, and I was covering Jerry Tarkanian, and I had come to Fresno from the newspaper in Indiana, and the newspaper in Indiana, I was covering Bobby Knight, so I went on this pendulum. It was like whiplash-like from covering Bobby Knight at Indiana to covering Jerry Tarkanian in Fresno. And they were very different in their methodology. They were very different in their life experience. They were very different in that one was at a Power Five university that had won national championships. And another guy, made hay at mid-majors. And Jerry Tarkanian had an incredible career and very interesting life when you look at the places he coached and the things that he accomplished, and literally talking about, going to take Long Beach State and turn them into a powerhouse, and then UNLV and the Runnin' Rebels. Everybody remembers the Runnin' Rebels. And then his battles with the NCAA that ultimately, I think in today's world, there are so many people that would have appreciated what Jerry Tarkanian did and what he did in taking on the NCAA that really wasn't appreciated back in the day, so to speak. He won that battle with the NCAA. And his teams played at a high level. And ultimately, I think today, everybody kind of looks at the NCAA and goes, oh, that NCAA, they are out to get people. They're in it for the money. Oh, how much do they care about kids? I think ultimately now, as history has proven, you look back at the battles that Jerry Tarkanian won against the NCAA, and they might be some of the most important battles in the college world that didn't actually happen on a playing field. His kid, Danny Tarkanian, all grown up, joining us now. Danny, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you for having me on.
Where are you today? Are you in Vegas?
No, I moved my family up to a little small town up in northern Nevada called Gardnerville. So I'm up in Gardnerville.
What is life like amid coronavirus in northern Nevada?
Well, one thing is I can sit on my balcony and look at the Lake Tahoe Mountains, Sierra Nevada Mountains, as opposed to looking out the desert in Las Vegas and all the dirt brown there. So I think I got the better end of the stick on this one.
You got it. Look, I was talking before you came on sort of about your dad's battles with the NCAA, and I think now in today's world, people would have such a better appreciation for it. What was it like as a kid to watch your dad take on an entity like the NCAA?
Yeah, there was a lot of bitterness and heart feelings, and lack of a better word, a lot of hatred from everybody in our family towards the NCAA, but we were young at the time, a little more naive, and maybe felt that life was a little more fair than you do as you get older. The thing that you mentioned with my dad is, he fought the NCAA. The NCAA, as you mentioned, when he was coaching, was considered the white knight, that everything they did was good and proper, and anybody complained were cheaters and poor sports. And now you see in other schools, I've gone through the same thing my father complained about, and more people now are saying, wait, these are not fair situations, there isn't right, and maybe the NCAA isn't so good anymore. But that does sort of divert away from the big problem with intercollegiate sports and the NCAA right now. And that's the difference between when you get a coach or school or a representative school paying large sums of money to get a kid to go to school there. That's my father always felt was wrong and felt schools should and coaches should be penalized real strongly if they did that. But the rules that are written that create minor violations, violations that just allow the student athlete to live with dignity at college and on the same economic level as the other college kids. You know, my father broke those rules over and over again, more so than he even admitted when he coached. And every other school in the country who's recruiting those kids are doing the same thing. And it's just the epitome of hypocrisy that this isn't more out in the open. People don't understand this is what happens. Every kid in the country that comes from a that background, a poor inner city kid from an urban town, how do they get to school when they sign with a school? They can't pay for it themselves. They don't have any money. They don't have some, whoever they're living with, parent or guardian, doesn't have enough money to pay for the living expense, let alone a ticket to the school. So every school's finding a way to get it done, and my dad did that as did the other coach.
We're talking to Danny Tarkanian, son of Jerry Tarkanian, and you're right. Like I even look back at when I covered him, and you know, we were always trained as journalists to look at the letter of the law, and I look back now, and I go, hey, we're talking about paying players now. And back in the day, it wasn't okay even to buy a kid a meal. And what would your dad have thought about the idea of pay for play?
Well, he was very outspoken about it when he coached. That's what got him in trouble with the NCAA, because when he was coaching at Long Beach, he wrote some articles ripping the NCAA for not going after the big schools that were paying kids large sums of money, but instead of going after the small schools like Cleveland State, Western Kentucky, and Southwest Louisiana. For just doing the real minor stuff that you just mentioned. And he just felt that was completely wrong, and it should have been changed and needed to be made public. And that started his fight with the NCAA that lasted his entire career.
How much did, you know, because I know ultimately the story goes that Jerry Tarkanian beat the NCAA, but how much did that take out of him energy-wise, time-wise? How much of a distraction was that in your household?
Certainly significant, but through his coaching career, it had the biggest impact. And let's get be honest about it. He didn't beat the NCAA. He won a court settlement of $2.5 million. The attorneys took about 40% of that, and that was very nice. And it shows that the NCAA admitted they were wrong. But the NCAA, I mean, just the obvious one. My father was 59 years old. He had the top team in the country the last 3 years, and the NCAA forced him out at UNLV, ended what he had built his entire career on, and he finally reached the top, and it was destroyed. But then if you go back, it's even when he was getting it going some. At Long Beach State, he almost beat UCLA in the Western Regional Finals his third year there, and they came in and put Long Beach on probation. His fourth year at UNLV, takes the team to the Final Four, and they put UNLV on probation for 3 years. Even at Fresno, it took us a while to get it going, but we had a chance to be really good the last few years there, particularly the last one. And they suspended players for the most ridiculous things ever there, and they dismantled the team. You know, those are the things that don't show up on the career list and the stat sheets, but those are things that they did to my father that he'll never recover from and will never get the credit for.
As I look back, those UNLV teams that played against Duke, they were just lights out, and you know we all remember him. Those are teams that we all enjoyed watching. You were involved in that in uniform as a player. What was it like to play for Dad?
Playing for Dad was was interesting and a little tough because you're just the coach's son, and you have that. But playing for UNLV was so special for every kid that was there during that time period. It was a unique situation. You're in the entertainment capital of the world, and you're playing on a team that was the most exciting brand of basketball at that time. In the late 70s, people don't even talk about those teams, but they were averaging 110, 108 points per game for two seasons. They didn't have a shot clock or three-point line. So you're playing this exciting brand of basketball. You're playing in the entertainment capital of the world. You got all these big celebrities that were sitting in Gucci Row or the first row of the seats, which is before they were doing that for the Lakers. We had the pregame fireworks and light show, which nobody else had. And many are copying now. We had two music videos done before any other school ever had anything like that. And every place in town, people treated us as the biggest celebrities out there. And it was just an incredible, great atmosphere. Anybody who played during that time period will say the same things.
the, you know, your dad being out of a job, it must have been demoralizing to him because he had it going at UNLV. And one of the questions that I get asked all the time when we talk with people about that era is, you know, you had college kids in Vegas, and yet during that time when you guys were at a high level competing for national championships and Final Fours, by and large, those players did not get in trouble. Like, on a, how do you keep kids in Vegas out of trouble?
Well, you know, I don't know. We had a couple here or there that did. The vast majority that did. We had a lot more at Fresno State that got in trouble, which is ironic. There's not a lot to do out in Fresno. But, there were good kids there. And I'll tell you, there was a lot of pride about being a Rebel. And we also knew we were under scrutiny. If something did happen because we were such a focus of the community, it would be brought out of the paper. So maybe that was part of it. But we had some great kids, particularly at the end. The teams you talked about that lost to Duke and beat Duke, those kids were some of the greatest ones out there, people-wise, not just player-wise. Coach K from Duke said the same thing. He couldn't believe how wonderful our players were, particularly with the reputation they had. So I think you got to give credit to them.
Danny Tarkanian is our guest, son of Jerry Tarkanian. You've written a book called Rebel with a Cause. It's the true Jerry Tarkanian story. How is Rebel with a Cause different than the other books about Dad?
Well, there are a couple things. First is I laid out a very factual basis of my father's battles with the NCAA. I got all the court documents, which nobody else had. I got interviews with the NCAA investigators that nobody else had. I took out the emotion from the book. I don't know if you had a chance to read it yet or not, but I just kept all the factual stuff in and kept my personal opinions out, that if it wasn't supported by factual documentation. And no other book has that. And a little show you, my father admits freely that, yeah, they committed a bunch of different violations that were small and minor, but never bought a player ever. I talked about it in that book, and this is a true story, John. And I was his assistant. We have not made the NCAA tournament 5 years in a row. We were recruiting the best big man in the country, Leon Smith. And when I was at the airport in Chicago leaving there, one of his handlers, the day you guys called me up and said, Leon wants to come play for your father, UNLV. I got to get paid for him. You got to give us $5,000 and I'll send him there. And I called my father up, because I never had anybody ask me for money before like that. So I called my father up and asked him what should we do. And my dad said, I never bought a player before. I'm not going to buy one now. Well, he was never lower in his career than he was going into his fifth year at Fresno. And he turned down that. So I know he never bought players at all. So anyway, those are the factual things in my book that nobody else has. The second thing I put in there, which I thought was real important, is I put in a lot of the stuff that talked about my dad's character and how he was able to relate with the poor inner-city African-American kids that had trouble off the court and weren't good in the classroom. And I put in there a bunch of stories that I think were only circulating with my family and that went out there with the other media.
We're talking to Danny Tarkanian. His book is out. It's a book written about his father, Rebel with a Cause, by Danny Tarkanian. Danny, you know, your dad, you talk about him not wanting to buy a player, but it seems to me that the line that he drew was, hey, if this helps the kid, like buying a meal for a kid or maybe helping a kid out who was on financial aid but not able to pay all his living expenses, or you must be looking at what's going on with the NCAA trial and sort of the scandal that's been happening with players getting paid. You must be, it probably isn't very surprising to you, is it?
No, and I wrote about that in the book. This was going on way before the stories that have been leaked now. It used to be that the big boosters making these payments, and then when the pro contract got to be so big, it was the agents that were coming in and making these payments. They get aligned to a coach, and the coach gets the benefit of the player there. The agents are giving the players money, and then the agents get to keep the players or sign them when they get done. So it was going on with a number of schools. My father was an outspoken critic against it. But, you know, my dad, the ironic thing about everything that's going on right now at the NCAA is my dad argued his entire career that these kids should not be paid big sums to go to school there, but should have the opportunity to live as other college students do on campus and not at an inferior economic level. And now you see the NCAA just recently passed a regulation that allows schools to pay what they call exactly what my dad was saying, where the kid could live as fellow college students, not just room board and tuition. So a lot of things my dad argued for back when he was coaching that he was criticized and ridiculed for, now the NCAA has adopted.
Danny Tarkanian with us, son of legendary basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian. What did it mean to your dad towards the end of his life to get recognized as a Hall of Famer?
At that time, he hardly spoke. He passed away 16 months afterwards, and for a year or two before that, he had a hard time speaking. He had the cognitive skills where he understood, but there's something wrong with his vocal saying things. So we couldn't tell for sure what he really thought. You could look in his eyes, though, and that smile that he had, and it was so wonderful to see how much he appreciated that ceremony, being around all those great players and the nice things each one of them has said. We have a video of it that just touches the heart when you look at the enjoyment that he had in his eyes. And I can guarantee you there was more enjoyment for my father that moment than anybody else has ever been inducted.
Danny, the book is called Rebel with a Cause, Danny Tarkanian writing about his dad. I encourage you to pick it up. But Danny, before I cut you loose, you know, you look back at dad's career as a coach, and, you know, from Long Beach to UNLV to Fresno, the NBA, and, you know, a little small stint in there in the middle. If dad could go back, because you had a lot of conversations with him, what would dad have changed about that career?
He said over and over again he never would have criticized the NCAA with those two articles, because from that point on, he had to fight him his entire career. He regrets doing that. But, you know, from a son's standpoint, I think that was one of his best qualities, that he stood up for the underrepresented, the underprivileged, the people that didn't have a voice, and I'm most proud of him for doing so.
Danny, I appreciate you. I wish you success on this book, and enjoy that view in Nevada. Stay safe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Have a good day.
All right. Danny Tarkanian, there he is. I mean, isn't that interesting? The same thing that a son is proud of his dad for, standing up for what he thought was right, taking on the NCAA, is the same thing that he believes his dad would have gone back and changed. Think about the complexity of that. Pick up the book. It's called Rebel with a Cause. Danny trying to write about his father in a way that nobody else has. Leave it here. Our big splash is coming up. Our big splash, it is the one thing you need to know today. It is, of course, something we do every day on this show.
This is the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
But
the big splash! Brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the wait. Download the new Sport Clips Haircuts app and check in.
Carl Anthony Towns, who has been praying and thinking on his mother for some time. He lost his mother today. Prayers and condolences to Carl Anthony Towns, his father, and his family. Jacqueline Towns, who, as she was affectionately known, had been battling the coronavirus for more than a month. She succumbed today to that. She was a wife, a mother, a daughter, a grandmother, a sister, and a friend. She was the matriarch of the Towns family. And their Carl Anthony Towns has issued a statement saying that he's devastated by the loss. He's requesting privacy. But Jacqueline Towns has passed away due to complications as a result of COVID-19. That is the big splash. It's the one thing you need to know. Coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, a whole bunch of stuff going on. We are going to talk, of course, with Scott Ruick, the Oregon State women's basketball coach. He'll join us top of the hour. Also, Punch It Audio, Isaiah Hodgins will be joining us. We'll talk about Bill Walton's movie list. He released that to me, gave me his movie list. I put it out there. It's on Oregon Live if you haven't seen it. Look at my Twitter feed, at John Canzano, BFT. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about your Easter. I got to talk about your Easter. Also, by the way, Question for Judah, question for Adriana. Do you believe coronavirus was created in a lab? Yes or no? Some part of you.
Boy, maybe a tiny, tiny part, just because I've got a little skeptic in me, but maybe a small, small part.
Adriana, coronavirus, was it created in a lab?
I guess maybe a little part.
Okay.
I haven't really thought about it.
You're not alone. About 35% of people believe that it was created in a lab or that it was created by a country. I have raised that concern at different points. Scientists are saying it was not created in a lab. They know because they've studied it. The genetic analysis shows that it comes from nature. But about 35% of people believe that coronavirus, COVID-19...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.